This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly show on Brooklands Radio, where we spend an hour talking to some very inspirational women. I'm Linda Berger, and on today's show we have expert dog trainer Eleanor Hogan from Else K9 Solutions, followed by social media guru Anita Chapman of Neats Marketing, and to end the show, a life-enhancing music therapist, Meeta Killick from Living with Harmony. A very interesting show indeed. So here to kick off the show is Eleanor Hogan of Else K9 Solutions. A very warm welcome to you, Eleanor.
Thank you.
It's really great to have you here, actually. I've experienced you dog training on various occasions, but never had a chance to ask you how you actually got into it.
Well, I've loved training anything from a really young age. I wanted a dog as a child, couldn't have a dog, so I had a rabbit. So I trained my rabbit to do agility and go for walks on a lead. So it's kind of stemmed from there. So I did lots of things with horses, and then I finally got my own dog, and things moved on from there. I just love training absolutely anything. So I did quite a bit of sort of pet dog training with my own dog. And then I moved and I went off and did a degree in psychology, which gave me so much understanding about how dogs learn. In the meantime, getting lots of experience with other dog trainers, and finally set up my company.
So your degree in psychology, was it animal psychology then?
It was psychology in general. Okay. And then I've sort of focused on canine psychology after.
Okay. Because what I've really noticed about you, and which really inspires me, is that when you come and work with my dog, Milo, he sits there and he looks at you in a way that says, what does she want from me right now? And you don't do anything. And what's the secret? Because he's got that instant respect for you.
I think it's understanding how they learn and then giving them the time to work out what it is you want and communicating clearly. So I'm sure we'll end up talking about clicker training on this show, but it's a really clear way of saying to the dog, yep, you nailed it. Yep, you nailed it. So then when he doesn't get the click, he's going, oh, what do I need to do? So yes, I think it's being clear and what's the best way to put it? Fun, I think.
Mm. You mentioned to me about it's not so much about rewards, but choice.
Yes, so I do a lot of choice-based training. So dogs are quite simple, like most of us. If we enjoy doing something, then we'll do the same thing again. If we don't enjoy it, then we don't do it. So the way in which I train is I set up two choices. A choice I like that's going to be heavily rewarded, or a choice that I don't like so much that isn't going to get rewarded. So all they do is go, oh, I like this choice, which happens to be my choice. But because the dog's working it out themselves, they almost think like it's their idea. So it's kind of an effective way of training.
Hmm. Well, it's certainly, I mean, I've had one or two trainers in my life with various dogs that I've had, but certainly you stand out, Amal.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a bit about your company, when you set it up and what you offer?
Yes, so I've been training for a long time, and I went into doing it on my own a couple of years ago. So my company is relatively new, but it's taking off really well. I do classes. A lot of my work is one-to-one, so things like recall are almost better taught in the place in which you actually want the recall. So a lot of my work is one-to-one with clients. And to be honest, it's a really effective way of learning. The classes are fun, so a lot of people really enjoy that for the basic training. So they're my two main things that I'm doing at the moment.
So your classroom, because I haven't had your classroom training, so I'm quite interested to hear what else you offer. You do the basics. For somebody like me who you've seen a few times, what might I come back to you for in a class, perhaps?
So the class is, sometimes I do a dog sports class. So I'm just about to run a fun agility class for people that just want to engage their dogs and have some fun. And nothing more fun than agility. My talk classes, they're just small classes, and we look at all the skills that I also do in one-to-ones. So we cover lead walking, recall, paying attention with distractions, so in a room with other people and other dogs, just learning how to pay attention, making good choices I cover in the class, and we have some fun doing it. So
that's a class where you do come with your dog?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Yes. Oh, well, that sounds like something I'm pretty much going to book on right after now. So
Milo would love it.
He would like that. There are things that I have questions about that I haven't had a chance to ask you, like playing tug. Is that something you should do or shouldn't do?
Absolutely. So when I go to see a puppy, people are like, oh, am I supposed to play tug though? Because doesn't that make my dog aggressive? Absolutely not. My answer is, are they tugging on your clothes? And inevitably they go, yes. So I say, well, rather than tugging on your clothes, let's give them something to tug with. And it's a great reward when they get older. So when they get older and you're in the middle of a field and you're calling your dog, a piece of chicken probably isn't going to cut the mustard, but they love to come back for a game of tug. Okay. So tug is wonderful. Oh, and it also puts teeth at one end of a toy and a child's hands at the other end of the toy, and they can have a game together without puppies ending up accidentally biting them.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. What about things like bones? There seems to be a different reaction to bones than normal food. Both my dogs have a different reaction to bones than a bowl of food. What's the rules around that?
Do you mean in terms of resource guarding?
Yes.
Okay, so dogs are naturally possessive. So one of the things I put in early in both one-to-ones and puppy classes is the idea of swapping. So when a dog catches its dinner, it doesn't say to its mate next door, can I share? Do you want to share with me? They say, I don't think so. So we teach them to share. So in a human world, we like them to give things back, and we like them to be comfortable with us around when they're eating. So I teach them very early on that a hand approaching their food bowl just gives them something nice. And if they give up something, sometimes they get it back again, or sometimes they get a treat. So it's really teaching a skill dogs don't have of swapping.
So if you've got possessive behaviour over a bone, for instance, and you've just noticed it, how would you go about in the first early instance of exchanging, say, a piece of steak or something that might be worth swapping a bone for? I'm not sure what it would be. How would you go about it?
So it depends upon whether it's a young puppy that's just started to display that behaviour, or whether it's an older dog that's been doing it a long time. So if it is an older dog that's been doing it a long time, they really need to go and see a qualified behaviourist, because they will need to work through steps very carefully to make sure that they don't get bitten and the dog learns that your hand moving around their food is okay. With a puppy, if they're a little bit possessive, I might go and get them a little bit of steak out the fridge and give it to them. Okay. So that they're going, oh, okay, when the hand comes near my bone, I feel, yep, I get something nice. And then I might do a little swap. So I might give them some food, maybe pick up the bone when they're ready, and then give it back to them after they've had their piece of steak. So it's teaching them that you're not going to take it away all the time.
Yes. It's a little bit like when you're on a walk and you call them and reward them, but you don't put them on the lead every time.
Is it? Yes, absolutely. That kind of very thing? Similar, yes. Okay. So we're just kind of teaching them human skills, ones that they don't normally have to deal with as dogs.
Okay. So is it ever too late to train a dog?
Absolutely not, no. Dogs will learn until they're really, really old. If it's a behaviour that maybe has been going on for a while, it will take that little bit longer and a little bit more patience. So it's a bit like us. If we've had a habit for a long time, it takes a long time to undo that habit. But dogs love learning. So my dog that's now retired from competition, she is enjoying doing some trick training with me at the moment. So
I saw a lovely video on your Facebook page with a little cavalier who is so obedient. Is that one of yours?
Yes, that's my older dog who's just retired. She's been amazing. She, I found obedience when she was young. Hadn't done it before. And she's literally taken me from the lower classes all the way up to some more complex classes, and she's also taken me to Crufts.
Yes.
So she is amazing. She's we've been quite a team.
So what have you learned about obedience through... sorry, what was the name of your dog?
His Sophie.
Sophie. What have you learned through training Sophie in obedience yourself?
You learn so much from every dog you work with because everyone's a little different. And she's taught me, how dogs learn to a certain extent in a practical way, how she's learned. She's particularly, it's a very much a teamwork when you do obedience. So obedience is a bit like the dressage of dog training. So it's quite a connected sport. And she's very aware of my emotions. So we've worked really hard at working on not being nervous or being happy when one of us is nervous when we go to compete. So she's taught me a lot about having understanding of her feelings and my feelings and how to work through those. So it's not even just about learning the skills. It's actually being able to go into a ring when you've been judged and do it. So it's been she's been really interesting, taught me loads.
I thought it was fascinating watching her, and I aspire to be able to do that with my pup Milo. How much work does that require?
It requires quite a lot to get it to competition standards. So it would be following on from the lead walking that you've done with Milo, and building it so that he begins to understand how to be more technically accurate. So the heel work, for example, the dog has to stay at your side and not deviate. So they need to always be in sync with you and read what your body's doing when you do turns. So there's quite a bit of training to teach the technical side. And there's a lot of training in that you don't reward in the ring. So your dog has to be able to go in and perform knowing that they're going to get a reward when they leave. And also being able to do it first time, which is quite a challenge. And Sophie has made me laugh on many occasions when it hasn't quite gone quite right.
So were you training her on a daily basis?
Training is ongoing all the time, but for competition, I'd say I do a little bit most days, not every day, and we have little holidays as well, but short fun sessions is what she enjoys.
Okay. And what about when you've got two dogs? How does that work?
So with two dogs, it's train each one individually so that they're learning the skills, so they really understand what it is you'd like them to do, and then you can begin to put them together. So when each one understands what a sit is, what a recall is, what heel work is, then you can begin to teach them together. But teaching together is quite challenging because one might do it right while the other one isn't, and how do you reward one and not the other? So yes.
So what makes you different? I mean, I've observed you, but I mean, for the listener, what makes you different in your company, different in the way that you train?
So I really want to support people. So I'm extremely not judgmental. Obviously, I know how to train dogs, and I know how to train people to train their dogs. But I aim to help. So to meet every family with what they see, what they would like to achieve, and support them. So not only do I do the sessions, but I send a email detailing exactly what we did, step-by-step guides, because I forget things. So I don't want people to go, what did I do at the beginning of the session, so that they're really clear. And then I have a Facebook group so that people can share ideas, share progress, ask questions and things. So it gives a bit of community as well.
I think that's really important, because certainly other trainers that I've used in the past has never sent me a follow-up, and I'm useless with keeping notes, so it's really great to have it in an email. So that's wonderful.
I think that comes from the fact that I have a poor memory. And I think, how can I help people to learn as quickly as possible? So I don't wish to do lots of sessions with people unless they want them, but each session I want people to make really good progress. So that's my aim.
What do you think makes a good trainer in an owner?
In what way?
Well, the positive reinforcement way versus bribery, I guess.
Ah, okay, yes, good question. So a lot of people will bribe the dog, as in use food laws to get them to do things. The way I train uses clicker training, which it reinforces. So I get the dog to do the behavior and then they can earn the reward. So instead of they're just sitting there looking at the food going, yes, that's what I'm going to do, it's getting the dog involved, and it allows away from having food on you. So the dog learns that if they do these things with you, they can get rewarded, but it's not actually on your person.
Excellent. We've come, unfortunately, to the end of your time. So would you like to give one piece of advice to our listeners before you go?
I think the biggest thing is find out what you enjoy with your dog. It is a wonderful bond when you train together. So find something you enjoy and go out and enjoy your dog.
Thank you so much, Eleanor. And if people want to get hold of you, what's the best way?
You can call me by telephone, visit my email, my website, and or via email.
And your website
is? So my website is www.elscaninesolutions.co.uk.
And that's K9.
The letter K and the number 9.
Lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. You've just been listening to expert dog trainer Eleanor Hogan from Else Canine Solutions. And now we're going to take a short break, after which we will hear from Anita Chapman of Needs Marketing.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. Picture this, a Sunday lunchtime carvery where you can eat as much as you want with a choice of 1, 2, or 3 courses. You're free to help yourself to succulent pork, beef, chicken or gammon, and if you wish, you can have them all. Add in a homely, family-orientated environment with free parking, and you have your perfect destination for the perfect Sunday lunch. It's all here at the Best Western Ship Hotel by Monument Green, High Street, Weybridge. Book now on 0800 393 130. We're one of the most welcoming places to eat in Weybridge.
You don't have to be in Surrey to hear Brooklands Radio, and with our brand new free app, it's even easier to take the sound of Surrey with you. Download the app to your mobile device to be just one click away from music, entertainment, and all of the local news that you need. Plus, you can instantly access our social media feeds, keeping your finger on the Surrey pulse. Our app is available on all Android devices through Google Play and on your Apple products through the App Store. You can also find out more details on the website www.brooklandsradio.co.uk. So whether listening near or far, take the sound of Surrey wherever you are with the new free app from Brooklands Radio.
Hi, it's Jill Bennett. Why not listen in on Thursday afternoons between 1 and 4? I'll be playing lots of great tunes featuring classic hits from across the decades, news and events in Surrey, and your essential guide to a happier and healthier lifestyle. There'll be a guest each week sharing their experiences. So join me, Jill Bennett, this Thursday on Brooklands Radio between 1 and 4.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Linda Berger, and my second guest, Anita Chapman of Needs Marketing. Anita is a freelance social media manager with clients mostly in the world of books, who also runs courses and writes historical fiction. Welcome, Anita. Lovely to have you here.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So you founded your company in 2014, is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
How did you get into this in the first place?
Well, I started writing a novel a good few years ago. I'm still not published, by the way. But I was submitting it to agents, and an author told me that when you're submitting to agents, you need to have a social media presence, ideally, because the first thing they do these days is Google you and a blog. So I started a blog, my Needs Writer blog, which was sort of my life as writing a novel. And then I got asked, I did some volunteering for National Trust, helping with their social media and updating their website and writing press releases. And then Richard Lee at the Historical Novel Society asked me to do social media for them. And one thing led to another. Then authors started to ask me to help them. And a writing teacher who I knew called Ruth Brandt, said she had a whole class of writers who wanted to learn about social media. So I arranged my first course and a lot of them came to that. And that was near Guildford, the first one in Surrey, upstairs in a pub.
Sounds brilliant.
Yeah, so thank you, Ruth, for that.
Well, actually, it's really good because I was thinking myself, I'm an author, but I'm a reluctant social media user. And
yes.
I was thinking today, in fact, I have to thank you because you've drawn me back.
I got you to tweet.
You did, even though I couldn't find it on your... did it come through to yours?
Yes, I got your...
Oh, that's amazing. Because I had to do a little YouTube video, teach yourself Twitter. And I thought, I know what the at sign is for now.
And
yes, it's quite good once you just get the initial basics.
Twitter can be confusing for someone starting.
Yeah, it's not
on
my
it.
Thing. But what I was going to say is that what I've realised is that as an author, social media is something really important to crack. And what you've done, which is so, so brilliant... Oh. Is that you've combined your writing with something really useful that you can blog about.
Yes.
In fact, I was on something of yours today. It was a blog.
Is it a Neat's marketing blog?
It might have been. You had something like 340,000 hits.
Yes. I mean, some of them, the Neat's marketing posts get a lot of, like, some of them get 20,000 views, which is great, but they take over 10 hours to write. But that's the problem.
So somebody like me who knows nothing, how do you get that kind of pull onto your...
Well, you have to find your network first on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So initially I found... other writers on Twitter. My network grew from there. The Romantic Novelists Association is a brilliant organisation, and I was part of their new writer scheme where you can send a manuscript in for review. And I got to know lots of those members on Twitter and then go to events and got to know them better. And everyone's very supportive. So they all share each other's blog posts and content online, which is really helpful. But the Neat's marketing blog, I spent quite a lot of time just building my online presence for that.
And did you have to take your eye off your book to do
that? Yeah, I mean, I have to say, you probably noticed I haven't done a blog post on there for a while because I've been trying to finish my second book.
Right.
Because,
what is that?
That's historical dual timeline set in the 18th century in a country house and Venice. And it's it's the era of the Grand Tour. And it's about a painting which is found in a loft in the present day, and then they go back to find the story of how it got there. But I'm trying to finish it and submit it, and I pitched it recently at a conference, and an agent asked me to rewrite the first few chapters and send them to her.
Wow.
So I need to get back to that next week and hopefully see what happens.
How does an author juggle? Like at the moment, I'm juggling my life trying to write a thriller, finish a thriller
It's hard.
How do you fit in social media?
Well, I think you have to manage your time and it really carefully. And this is something I help clients with and teach in my courses. There are ways you can save time by scheduling tweets, for example. You can set up lists on Twitter so you can manage very easily which tweets you're seeing from who. And just simply setting a timer. I mean, I do that with my writing as well. I'll set a timer for an hour sometimes just to give myself time to write, and then maybe set a timer for 20 minutes for social media. Lots of writers do that sort of thing.
So it's really time management then.
There's a really good technique called the Pomodoro technique. I don't know if you've heard of it, which, Google it. It's really interesting. And it's something like you set a timer for 20 minutes, then you have a break, and then you set it for another 20 minutes if you're struggling to get a project done.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite useful.
I like that.
Yeah.
Pomodoro.
Yeah, I don't follow it exactly, but I've used it. I use a timer quite a lot on my phone when I'm working.
Well, good idea.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your courses then.
Yes. The next one's 16th of November in London, and it's at the Hilton Doubletree, Westminster, which is a relatively new venue. I've used a few since that pub in the early days. I realised... the Wi-Fi wasn't that great there, so I now always use hotels because the Wi-Fi is very good. And I have big screen, lots of slides on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, blogging, lots of worksheets, and everybody brings their laptop.
Right.
So that somebody like you who's sort of not sure about where to click or how to actually compose a tweet, I can help them with that. But I get much more experienced people as well who are looking to take their social media to the next level. So mm-hmm. I often get 2-3 absolute beginners and then other authors who have just got a book deal and are looking to sort of get their social media all ready and look at how they're going to launch their book.
And roughly how many do you have in a class?
I have maximum 11.
Okay.
I work very hard to fill it on. I use Facebook advertising quite a lot. And my blog got me quite a lot of sign-ups on courses and clients as well. Blog posts can be very useful in that way. If you write, you know, something that shows some kind of credibility in the subject that yes. you know about, then I think people are more likely to sign up.
And you know. And do you offer courses online?
No, I don't. I have thought about that, but I do like to get out and see people in real life
yeah.
because a lot of my time is spent, you know, at a desk working on my own. I have thought about it. I might do that in future. I'm thinking about probably doing courses for small businesses in Surrey because I've been asked to work for a couple of small businesses in Surrey recently. And they were sort of saying, you know, we'd love to do a course like yours. But I was thinking my course wouldn't work for them because they probably wouldn't use Twitter as much, the businesses that they were running. So I'd have to think about it carefully. But I am looking at venues and thinking about it at the moment. So
if somebody like me comes yeah. to one of your courses, what can I expect to take away at the end? And what will I know?
You take lots of information away with you, lots of worksheets that you can use at home, which is step-by-step instructions on how to do certain things on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Facebook, if you haven't got a Facebook page or if you've set it up but not very much, telling you exactly how to complete it in step-by-step stages, telling you how to make sure that your Facebook settings are correct because a lot of people don't know about privacy settings on Facebook, very important. But also you will have tweeted and we will have I create a hashtag for my day for the day so that everyone can we can look at the tweets that everyone's posting yes. on the screen, which is quite good fun.
Yes.
So I really always try to make it fun, enjoyable, relaxing and nobody's made to feel uncomfortable if they don't know anything. It's all very inclusive and I try and explain it all very simply as well. I'm not a fan of sort of big terminology.
No. So when I started doing a bit of social media, I think I messed up a little bit.
Yes.
So my Twitter, I took a theme from the children's book that I had done at the time,
yes.
Which was anti-bullying. Just
yes.
That was just one theme.
Yes.
And followed anti-bullying organisations. Now that I'm doing other things and I've got small businesses that I look after and I'm writing a thriller,
yeah.
I'm wondering, should I set up another Twitter account?
Who's a thriller aimed at? What age?
Adults.
Adults. So the thing about, because I noticed you're a children's author, doesn't work so well on Twitter.
No.
Because the children aren't there.
No.
So children's authors work really well. Talks, library talks, talks in schools and things like that. But I just set up, are you going to publish it under a different name?
Not sure yet.
I would say you probably would or should.
Okay.
Usually an author will choose a different name for a different genre or their publisher would advise that they would want them to.
Okay.
Unless you're somebody really famous, you know.
So it's a clean start then?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I would set it up completely fresh. Get all your profile nice, a nice profile photo, and a header photo is sort of showing your brand, whatever the brand, where's it set? Is it set anywhere exotic or
chopper much?
Do and you make it really clear in your bio what the book's about.
Yes,
so that people know what they're going to get.
You know. I think that's my greatest resistance to social media, and you know, I was thinking today, what have I liked about social media? I like Julie and Julia.
Oh, I love that film.
I absolutely love the whole concept behind it.
Yeah.
And I could see how that works visually, yes. And the blog. And I actually looked at it. You have inspired me to do so much today.
Oh,
I can't tell you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I looked up this, and it's hard to find the Julie blog.
Yes. It still exists? Really?
Well, you can dig deep find it. And I really loved her writing.
Yes.
I hadn't come across it before because I'd just seen the film.
Yeah.
So I can see how that works on social media, and I can see how yours works. And actually, this is wonderful because you've got everything to sell. All you have to make sure is that your writing's good.
Get a book deal.
Yeah. But that, you know, so I can see those two things. But then there's me.
Yes.
And I don't see the connection. I don't want to blog about my book.
Yeah. I think you wouldn't blog about it until it's published because you wouldn't want to waste that content.
Okay.
Because normally when you publish a book, you go on what's called a blog tour where you are a guest on book blogger blogs. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yes.
And they review your book and often put the review on Amazon. And those are like gold, those reviews. And and they have guest posts. And so when your book's released, you want content about what inspired you to write the book and what it's about. Save that, I would.
So for somebody like me, and you must have a lot of me's that come to your training course, what do you do that's interesting?
That's a hard question.
Yes.
What do I do that's interesting?
Not you.
What do you do that's interesting?
What do people like me do that's interesting?
Well, that's the thing. You've got to... I mean, with a client, I'd sort of sit down and we'd go through everything, like their interests as well, part of the brand, and what's the book about and where it's set. But also when you're tweeting, if you think of one of your interests, you could tweet about that as well. Mm. That's part of your brand and you find common ground in those tweets. But it's also looking at other people like you to see what they're doing. Yes. And that's how you sort of start to get and understand how it all works.
I did think about following film writers that I really admire.
Yes.
And blogging about that.
Yes.
That did occur to me. So I would need to come on your course to understand how to manage all that.
Yes.
So, yes, you have...
You're welcome to come on my course.
So there was something I... I wanted to ask you about the reminiscence tea.
Oh, yes. That story was... what were you going to ask?
Well, it was highly commended in the Writers' Forum magazine, short story contest in February 17. But what's it about?
That was inspired by... When I worked at Poles and Lacey, I was inspired by an actual real-life reminiscence tea that I helped out with, and it was amazing. They basically invited... relatives, descendants of servants who worked in Poles and Lacey sort of in the early 1900s. So they had the butler's descendants and the lady's maid's granddaughter and daughter. And we were there to interview them and get that information for Poles and Lacey so they could try and compile information for exhibitions and that sort of thing. But it was so inspiring, so I made up a story about... it was inspired by this elderly man I interviewed, and it was about an elderly man, and it went back in time to just before the Second World War. So I have thought about turning that into my third book, actually.
It's not on the internet anywhere. I tried to find it.
I can send you a copy if you want to read it.
I would love that. Unfortunately, we've run out of time.
Okay.
So if you were to leave the listeners with one piece of advice, what would that be?
Take lots and lots of photos wherever you go because they're really useful on social media, and edit them as well as you can as well. There are lots of other tips, but that's
they'll have to come
quite
to your course
good one.
For that.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they want to get hold of you, what's the best way?
So my website is neetsmarketing.com. So it's neetsmarketing.com. And you can contact me through my website.
Brilliant.
And I'm on Twitter, obviously, and Facebook and everything else.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Anita.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was Anita Chapman from Neets Marketing. Time now for another break, after which we'll be hearing from Meeta Killick from Living with Harmony.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge, is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7am to 11pm weekdays, 7am to 9pm Saturdays, and 10am to 4pm on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Brooklyn's Radio's audience is growing. Potential listeners are listening, but are they hearing your message? Maybe you're saying to yourself, I don't know about internet radio, or maybe I should wait. Well, instead, think about it this way. Do you want to be one of the first businesses like yours to advertise on internet radio, or the last? So why not tap into the power of Brooklyn's Radio easily and affordably? Contact Fiona through sales@brooklynsradio.co.uk. That's sales@brooklynsradio.co.uk. Brooklyn's Radio, loving Surrey Radio. Brooklyn's Radio.
Hello, I'm Sarah Chaplin. Join me for Jazz London Live on Brooklyn's Radio every Thursday night from 10 till midnight. I'll be featuring a wide variety of jazz, including the great recording artists like Billie Holiday and John Coltrane, as well as the best homegrown and up-and-coming jazz from the British jazz scene. There'll be some Latin, funk and fusion thrown in too from time to time, as well as some jazz versions of pop, folk and rock songs, some new arrangements of old standards, timeless classics and new originals. Each week I'll be interviewing a jazz musician, promoter or broadcaster. There'll be an album of the week and the essential Jazz London Live gig guide. So join me this Thursday at 10 p.m. for Jazz London Live on Brooklyn's Radio.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women. I'm Linda Berger, and here with me in the studio is our final guest, music therapist Meeta Killick from Living with Harmony. Welcome, Meeta.
Hello, Linda. Nice to be here.
That's lovely to have you. So, can you share with the audience what is music therapy exactly?
Sure, I think that's a really good place to start. Everyone knows the power of music. People enjoy listening to their favourite songs. Jingles on the television help people to recognise products and brands. So music affects our lives in a big way. Scary music makes horror films scarier. Romantic music makes romantic films more romantic. But when you're looking at music therapy, you're looking at how the power of music can help vulnerable people with their lives. People with a dementia can find that songs they know bring back memories for them. People with learning difficulties can find that the rhythms and tones of music carry them into a world of abilities and strengths, which they maybe find difficult to access in their general lives. People with mental health issues find that using music can really help lift depression and reduce anxiety. So using music in a way that actually helps people with their lives, that's the goal of music therapy.
I don't think people actually realise quite how powerful music is. For instance, people listen to sad songs and they're not realising that it's influencing their mood. And it's a choice, isn't it, sometimes?
I think that's really true. I think music has a lot of momentum behind it. The songs that have associations for you, or indeed associations and moods for the singer or the songwriter, yes, that will affect your mood. So when my company goes into care homes, we talk with the care homes about the kind of media people are exposed to. I think it's really useful to have music that is cheerful and uplifting for people, and I think it can be useful to listen to sad songs, because perhaps if you feel sad, it stops you feeling so isolated. But I think staying listening to sad and dark music all the time isn't going to help you, particularly when you're at a stage in your life where maybe you can't choose what you're listening to. So if I had a choice for a client, I would choose to offer the music they enjoyed that was possibly more cheerful and less sad.
I noticed on your website that you did an interview, well, you had a review on BBC Radio Solent of Greenview Care Home. And that was lovely, because you were getting them to sing When the Saints Come In, Go Marching In, and one or two other things. And they really liked it, because it was back to their time, wasn't it?
Yes, I think music that's meaningful to people, if you're going to sing songs with people. They've got to be songs that people know, songs that are easy to sing, and yes, songs that are enjoyable, and songs with a beat if you're going to play instruments.
So how did you get into this then?
So I used to be, and still am, a performer and an entertainer, and I ended up coming back to England from a contract in Abu Dhabi, and I didn't have a job, and I ended up volunteering at a local music therapy department, and the rest is history. I got hooked. This is a lovely thing to do. This is a thing that really motivates me, and I went ahead and did my training, and that was probably about 30 years ago.
Yeah, so an MA in music therapy.
I have an MA in music therapy, that's true.
How long does it take to get that?
It took me a very long time because I did it part-time when my children were small, and I had this idea that, you know, while I was breastfeeding and on maternity leave, I could do an MA, and that kind of didn't work out exactly right.
Right.
Not having any sleep didn't help me to make a very coherent dissertation.
Well, you're here now and you've done it. So tell us about your daily life and who you visit, who you help.
Well, Living with Harmony have been to two care homes today. Both were for older adults. One was a care home where we worked with people who have, I think the term is capacity, so people who are in a care home but know what they want and can choose. And that was quite enjoyable. We had a lot of fun with the carers, laughing around and teasing and quite a bit of banter. And then in the afternoon we went to a nursing home, and there the level of need was much higher. People are possibly in end-of-life care. They are maybe in the later stages of dementia, so the need for support is different.
Okay. And what kind of things did you do there?
We made music with them. There's a thing, I suppose you could best describe it as attunement, where you follow what people bring. So we jokingly say, you bring it, we sing it. So we allow people to lead very much. So what is meaningful to people is what we work with. So sometimes it might be their movements, sometimes it might even be just the rhythm of their breath, and sometimes it might be songs that they sing.
Okay. And how long do you spend with them, roughly?
Sessions are about an hour, and that's not for any good reason. It's just that it's a block of time that allows quite a lot of people to have some attention. And also, we specialise in group work, so an hour allows a group to really gel. People who sit together ordinarily may not be talking to each other or playing with each other, so it can take a little time to warm up and get woken up and enjoying the music. And then at the end, it's important also to wind down a little bit and say goodbye.
So this is very powerful for older people or people on their way out. What about younger people?
I think that music and music therapy is powerful for everyone. My MA, we spoke about earlier on, I did my dissertation on group music therapy with children.
Okay.
And I love working with children. The interesting thing about children is that it's much more goal-directed. Children are growing, they're changing, maybe they're walking better or talking better as a result of their music therapy. There's quite often a measurable progress, where with adults, particularly older adults, it's much more about quality of life, well-being, reducing anxiety, improving the quality of life, but not necessarily pushing very much against the curve of actually what they can do.
And I noticed that it's music therapy is now recognised by Ofsted as beneficial in learning and pastoral needs.
It really is.
That's quite a development, really, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And the big thing I'd like to shout about is that it's now in the dementia pathway of the NICE guidelines. So the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, which regulates health in England, have recognised music therapy as a beneficial intervention for people with dementia.
That's brilliant. It really is. Because I've had a number of friends whose parents have suffered from dementia, and anything that can bring some relief has got to be good news.
And I would really encourage people, there's a download on our website where you can actually have a little bit of guidance how to produce a playlist for people.
Okay.
And I think anyone listening to this who cares for or cares about someone with a dementia, help them to organise a playlist so that they can have access to the music that they enjoy, because everyone's tastes are very diverse. And you might not know by just looking at someone what they like. Some people have had really interesting lives that have involved maybe living abroad. I met a lady a couple of years ago who had a very English accent and a very British demeanour. She'd actually spent her early life in Mauritius.
Okay.
And she loved Sega dancing. And without doing a little bit of talking with her and a little bit of playing around on YouTube and finding things and wondering about what she enjoyed, I don't think anyone would have guessed that. So family and friends will know people's history, will know how to help them have the music they enjoy. And then if it's available for them, then you can encourage the carers to play it for them. Play it for them when they're lonely, play it for them when they're stressed. Play it for them when you want to wake them up to get them active and maybe eat more or drink more.
So it seems like dementia is a big part of what you specialise in. What about younger people, teens with troubles?
I think for teenagers, what's really good is when they are able to create or co-create their own music. I think the teenage time is a time when your body's changing a lot, you're developing your personality, and sometimes it can be really confusing and really upsetting. For some people, the transition from childhood to adulthood can actually be quite difficult. So, and getting creative, expressing yourself through music, writing your own songs, making music, and finding ways of safely sharing what can be quite difficult emotions through music making can be really positive, very safe, and there's really good evidence for reducing anxiety and improving mood.
So are you actually going into schools doing work?
I don't go into a school. My partner Alistair Clarkson, he goes into a school for young people with autism. For us, we're a company, we're not a charity, and mainly the schools are serviced by, there are some wonderful charities around who offer therapy for children.
Right. Okay. What are your aspirations with your work?
At the moment, we're looking really at how we can help in the meditation and mindfulness space. There's a lot of really good work that we do that's about the joyful, playful, getting active, singing and dancing aspects of music therapy. But I think one area that doesn't get talked about enough, particularly in care homes, is the idea of peacefulness. Care homes can be very busy places. Whether you have a learning difficulty or autism or indeed a dementia, there's quite a push for activity to get things done. And we feel that mindfulness, peacefulness, and meaningful quiet time is really important.
Right.
So at the moment, what we're really looking at is how to develop ways of sharing mindfulness, sharing meditation, and a sense of spirituality in these settings. Because if I become old and vulnerable and in a care home, I'd like to do things, but I'd also like to have some gentle, peaceful time.
And actually, meditation has been proved to be very good for your physical state. And I've noticed myself, I do meditation, that if the music, and there's a lot available on YouTube, if the music has emotion in it, it doesn't work. Whereas you sent me some lovely music, which we're going to hear shortly, which is just perfect for relaxing and getting into an alpha state, and no emotion in there. It's just peaceful, relaxing music.
That's a really good point you make. So music has many facets. The opportunity for bringing back memories and for sharing with known songs is really powerful. However, music with associations, particularly music with words, but any music that's familiar to you, will bring thoughts.
Yes.
And when you meditate, what you're aiming for is to clear your mind of thoughts.
Yes.
Because it's the thoughts and the thoughts going round in your head that brings the anxiety and the tension.
Yes.
So releasing thoughts is really important, and that's where we offer music specially to be unfamiliar, gentle, relaxing, and hopefully promoting the mindful space.
Well, it certainly worked for me.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. So is there anything you'd like to give us a bit of advice to our listeners before you go?
Well, I think the music you're about to hear is available on our Facebook page, The Mandala Cafe, and it's also available on our homepage, Living with Harmony. And yes, we suggest colouring a mandala. Print a mandala and do some colouring, listen to the music, enjoy, and see if you feel better.
So would the best way be your website?
The website is great. It's playing from SoundCloud on the homepage.
And that's www.livingwithharmony.co.uk, is it?
.net.
.net. Okay.
Livingwithharmony.net.
Okay, thank you so much. I'd like to thank all our guests today, Eleanor Hogan from LSK9 Solutions, Anita Chapman of Neats Marketing, and Meeta Killick from Living with Harmony, and of course Graham Laycock for operating the desk. Just a quick word to our listeners, we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives, so if you know of someone who you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them. Do join us again next week live at 1 p.m. on Tuesday and repeated at 8 p.m. on Thursday. Thank you for listening. It's Linda Berger here.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.